Among advocates of telework within the federal government, the U.S. Patent and Trademark Office is often seen as the gold standard. But over a period of about 4 years, one group of PTO employees, mostly teleworkers, literally got paid for doing nothing. And it wasn't a secret either. Managers within the Patent Trial and Appeal Board even devised a special pay code for time when employees were on the clock but weren't working. Other time, they called it. Those findings are part of a new report from the Commerce Department Inspector General's Office. Todd Zinser is the Commerce IG, and he joins us now. Mr. Zinser, thanks very much for coming on. Appreciate it.
Hi, Jared. No problem. Thank you for having me.
So can you give us some sense of scale about this problem, you know, in terms of the number of employees we're talking about, the number of hours, the other metrics that you looked at in the report?
Sure. The issues that we looked at were directed towards the Patent Trial and Appeal Board. At the time, there were between 38 and 50 paralegals that the Patent Trial and Appeal Board had hired. And the issue came about because those paralegals were hired to support a number of patent appeal judges, and those judges were not hired in a timely way. And so the paralegals had had little work to do or few judges to support. And so PTO was faced with this workforce problem.
You found that that mismatch led to these folks getting paid in about $5 million worth of both regular pay and in bonuses. And let's hit on that bonus issue real quick, too, because that's another surprising aspect of the report, despite the fact that at least some of these employees spent at least, you know, more than half of their time actually in this status of other time. They also got performance bonuses, correct?
Yeah, I think that's one of the significant issues that we identified was you had an overall management breakdown here, but in addition to the employees not having sufficient work to do, a very high percentage, between 90 and 95%, were given outstanding performance ratings. And as a result of earning an outstanding rating, they also earned performance bonuses. And we totaled the number of the amount of bonuses to be around $700,000 over that four-year period.
That statistic on its face, you know, is kind of shocking when you first hear it. But I suppose I could make a case that some of those employees may have deserved those bonuses in that it wasn't necessarily their fault that they weren't being given enough work. Did you find that these were folks who generally wanted to work but weren't being given things to do? Was there kind of a mixture of people's motivations in this whole mess?
Well, I think the large majority, yes, were interested in working. They didn't seek employment at PTO to just sit around. I do think that is absolutely true. But on the bonus issue, what the Patent Trial and Appeal Board wound up doing in 2013 was to prorate the bonuses based on the time that was actually spent doing work. And the bonuses in the prior years, the prior 3 years, were not prorated. So, for example, if you had to work on a patent appeal file and were actually doing productive work, you had to work at least 1,250 hours in the year to qualify for a performance bonus. So what they did in 2013 is they went back and they factored out the other time that the paralegals were charging, which was the non-productive time, and simply decided on performance bonuses based on the time that was actually spent performing work.
So to expand on those management issues a little bit more, you point out in the report that management within this division of USPTO knew about this issue going back several years and appears not to have done much about it. Did they do anything during that period of time? What was their general response after finding out that so many of these employees were getting paid for work they weren't doing?
Well, it was pretty clear from the investigation and some of the email traffic that we looked at that this was a fairly constant issue that the management would discuss among themselves, but the answer was always wait for additional judges to be hired. But in the meantime, no other steps were actually taken. For example, there is a process in the government to institute temporary layoffs. There could have been attempts to provide the paralegals with other work to do if they were to modify their position descriptions and detail them to other parts of the organization. Perhaps some of the employees would have been willing to move into a part-time status. You know, there were a variety of steps that the management could have taken, but they just didn't pursue those.
95% of the people in this cadre of this particular workforce were full-time teleworkers, I think. I think you're right that only, you know, two or three of these folks regularly came into the office. If you are someone who was an opponent of telework and wanted to argue against it, this is exactly the kind of case that you would point to, I think. Do you reach any conclusions about whether this proves that telework is a bad thing, or that at least it created some additional risk for abuse in this case?
Yeah, I think the best evidence there, Jared, is some of the testimony from one of the chief judges who arrived on the scene in I think 2012 or early 2013, and found that his paralegal workforce all teleworked. He made statements to us that he didn't really understand how an organization that really requires people being present, where it was able to operate in a telework environment like that. So I think the best evidence is from the chief judge himself along those lines.
I think another one of your conclusions here was that once management was pressured by essentially higher management to get rid of this use of quote-unquote other time, they did in fact find work for these employees to do to keep them occupied. How did that happen? Was it real work? Is this a problem that was imminently solvable all along?
Well, I think that is kind of a remaining issue. What happened was, after the whistleblowers came forward, and there were a total of three over the course of the investigation that came forward, and we brought this to the management's attention, the use of other time to record these hours went to zero. And the management instructed the staff to start using a different code called legal administrative time. And that's a broader category, and I think there is legitimate work that went on with that in that time code. But we also received information that a special project was created wherein the paralegals would go into closed files and do kind of a review of closed files. And the evidence that we picked up was mixed, and some managers called it busy work. And some managers thought that it was a worthwhile exercise, but what we suggested to PTO is to go into that time code and make sure that the time that's being charged there is actually productive work.
Mm. You alluded to this earlier, but it seems like basically the core issue here is that the staff of paralegals is essentially support staff to this board of appeals judges. And if there are not sufficient appeals judges to process, you know, the primary workload, they've got more support staff than they actually need. So has that come back more into balance, where they've got enough judges producing the output that require that amount of support?
Yes, they have. They have been able to hire additional judges, and right now, and they were shooting for a ratio of four judges for every paralegal. So I do believe that they're up over 200 judges at this point, with about 50 paralegals. So in terms of their plans, I think they are on track. But I also think that at some point, PTO has to look to see whether a 4-to-1 ratio is really sufficient to keep the paralegals busy.
And I guess the last thing I ask is, you know, this is obviously offensive to the conscience just in terms of a waste of taxpayer dollars, but is there any evidence that criminal laws or policies were broken here? I mean, do you recommend any specific remedies against leadership within PTO or the individual employees?
No, I think there's definitely some action that should be taken based on the management breakdown. But, you know, the employees and the managers, for that part, when we went to interview them, they're all very candid with us and very upfront. I don't think that the employees were doing anything that they weren't instructed to do by their supervisors. And it was just a management breakdown more than anything else. And I would think that it would at least be reflected in the performance records of the managers.